الجنسية دي نايم، ولي الاستماع إلى راديو بلدي أو الراديو عربي أمريكي ويعنى بقضايا الهرب في المهجر. برامجنا في راديو بلدي كل يوم جمعة من 8 حتى 9 صباحا في بث حي ومباشر عبر WNZK راديو 690 AM. صباح الخير بلدي، صباح الخير لكل مستمعينا.
Welcome to Radio Baladi, the first Arab, Middle Eastern and American simulcast radio show. Radio Baladi is broadcast every Friday morning on WNZK 690 AM from 8 until 9 Eastern time on Good Morning Michigan. Our call-in number 248-557-3300. And now, stay tuned for the best radio talk show on Arab and American issues.
I am Atif Abdeljawad. Join me the first Friday of each month at 8 a.m. Eastern Time. I will be discussing some of the most important issues and events in the Middle East live on America's Voice of the Arabs. WNZK 690 AM and WDMV 700 AM.
Good day, everybody. As tensions escalated between Israel and Iran in mid-April, protests on college campuses swept through the U.S. Israel's power of deterrence seems to be waning with Iran's first ever attacks on the Jewish state. And although student protests are not a first-time occurrence in the U.S., the Palestinian Intifada seems to have moved from the West Bank and Gaza to Columbia, UCLA, and more. To help us understand the implications of the current events, we have a group of distinguished guests and experts. We have author and Haaretz columnist Bradley Bernstein, whose new book is titled The End of Israel. We will talk to him about his book. We have Belinda Curtis Hanley, executive editor of the Washington Report on Middle East Affairs. And we have Al Arabiya, Washington D.C. Bureau Chief Nadia Belbassi Charter. Al Arabiya, by the way, is a Saudi-funded TV channel. Before we get started, I have two program notes. First, we are not coming to you just on radio, but also in video. Go to the Facebook page of U.S. Arab Radio and watch us in video on their page, on U.S. Arab Radio, on Zoom. The second note is that I would request from our guests to be brief in their responses because we have a lot to cover. My first question goes to all my dear three guests, and we will start with Belinda, Bradley, and then Nadia in that order. The question is, the U.S. has a long history with student protests that go back to the civil rights movement. It goes back to the Vietnam War and also against the apartheid government of South Africa in the 60s. All these protests ended successfully, bringing change. The question is, however, will the current protest succeed in bringing any change? How and why? Belinda.
Well, I think it is showing, these student protesters are showing a generational shift. And last night, Rashid Khalidi, who wrote The 100 Years War on Palestine, spoke at Columbia, and I really suggest all of your listeners listen to his talk. And I could read it if you wanted, but it is college campuses start change in this country, and they've opened Pandora's box now. I think the rest of the world and Palestinian kids are even showing signs saying, thank you, Columbia. The whole world is watching the U.S. colleges, and I think we on the campuses will see the world changing. And if you want, I can repeat Rashid Khalidi's address. His book, The 100 Years War on Palestine, is phenomenal. We have a bookstore in Washington, and we can't keep it on the shelves. He is speaking for telling the Columbia students, keep going, you're changing America, and shame on the administration for shutting you down. And one day, students at Columbia and all over the United States will be commemorated in the same way students protesting Vietnam, the Iraq War, civil rights issues are commemorated.
Bradley.
Yes, I actually agree with Delinda with one additional comment, having gone through some of these protests myself, is that it always takes too long. Pandora's box opens and people are changed, but the arc of justice takes too long to, or the arc of change takes too long to bend toward justice. And so I would only point out to the students that this is a marathon and not a sprint. Change will not come tomorrow. It has begun, but actual change, profound change, takes quite a while. I think that what we're going to see is that the echoes of these protests will be heard over a period of years, and in the course of those years, change will come.
Well, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is there in existence since early 20th century years, since even before 1948. So perhaps we have to wait some more time. I don't know if Nadia is here with us or not. If you are here, you are. Okay, it's your turn, Nadia.
Sure. I mean, I agree too, but I think the change is incremental. There is a shift in generational understanding and the nuances in particular of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. I have been on the campus of the GW for a few days. I have talked to some of the students. It's a bit disappointing when you see the American media, to be honest, the mainstream media, describing these students as they have no idea. They just listen to TikTok. They just want to be part of something they don't understand. And I think it's a little bit of an insult to these college students. I think we all have been there. We all did our part when we were younger. I myself was part of the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa when I was a student in London. Yes, it will happen. But the difference here is there is a lobby, and the lobby controls the narrative in America, and there's no doubt about it. So when it comes to Israel, we have seen now how the House is trying to muzzle free speech under the pretext of anti-Semitism. We know, I've spoke to many Jewish students who are there. So basically what they're trying to do is to shut down any criticizing of Israel. And the difference now is this new generation do not really watch the mainstream media much. So they have their own way of finding the news, alternative news, news that's not biased. And I think they will make a difference, but that difference is going to be long before you can see actually the results. And I think if the students are able to translate this protest about different administrations, not just this one, into votes, that will change. And the other things, if they can also try to create a movement where money should not be spoiling politics. If any politician wants to run for an office, whether it's a president or a congressman or a senator or a governor, they should make a way to fund themselves. But when you have a lobbyist who fund them, then they own the narrative and they own the message. And I think the students are leading that change. change, but it's going to be hard and long before we see tangible results.
We'll discuss some of those points throughout the program, but Brenda, Mr. Netanyahu, Israel's prime minister, says there will be a Rafah offensive with or without a ceasefire involving a hostage deal. How will this impact the Israel-U.S. relationship?
You're asking me. I think it's another step toward the end, because Americans are watching very carefully now, and no one is going to be appreciative of watching kids, children, more children being killed in Israel. I mean, in Gaza. Israel already has really blackened its eye with these attacks on Gaza. If they destroy defenseless people with bombs, not even soldiers, Americans aren't going to put up with that. And students, I want to say one more thing to what Nadia said. These students are going to have the money in several years. They will be able to change politics if it's only money that changes politics. These students will be the rulers here soon. So I am very encouraged.
Bradley, April isn't just the month of April's Fool, but we have seen April turning to become the scene of the first ever confrontation between Israel and Iran. Do you expect more confrontations? When I talk for confrontations, I'm talking about military confrontation between Israel and Iran in the near future.
I think that it's likely that the confrontation between the continuation of the confrontation between Israel and Iran may actually be carried out through proxies, in particular Hezbollah. I think that it's more than likely that there will be some cross-border violence, possibly on a very significant level, between Israel and the Hezbollah-controlled parts of Lebanon. And Hezbollah, of course, is a close ally of Iran, and the tension there is very high. There are continuing attacks between Israel and Hezbollah. They've been trading fire now for many months. If there is not a ceasefire, then it could spiral into a great deal of escalation. If there is a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas in order to have a hostage deal, what we've seen is likely is that Hezbollah will abide by the ceasefire as well.
Nadia, as you know, Iran for the first time hit Israel with about 300 drones and missiles. That attack came about with little damage, it seems to me, little damage to Israel. But what is the real impact on Israel of such attacks, if any?
Look, I mean, Iran has been fighting through proxies for decades, whether it is Hezbollah in Lebanon, the Houthis in Yemen, or the militias in Iraq. What happened and changed kind of the equation is actually an actual attack by Iran on Israel directly. But let's look at it. Let's examine it, why it happened. First of all, the bigger picture is neither Iran nor the United States want a bigger war. From day one, they're trying to contain this conflict between Hamas and Israel. They don't want it to spill out to Lebanon or to any confrontation with Iran. But what happened is the Netanyahu government, as you know, Netanyahu knows that the moment he's out of that office, if the war is ended and it's limited to that area only in Gaza, that means he's going to face trial. And so it's his interest in a way to expand this war. So what the Israelis did is they went and they hit the diplomatic mission in Damascus, and they killed three high-level IRCG commanders. Now, the U.S. said they cannot comment on it because the Israelis never admitted, although it has the modus operandi of the Israelis, and they're trying to investigate whether actually it is a diplomatic mission or not. The Israelis saying it's an adjacent building, and it's not part of the consulate or the embassy in Damascus. Now, this by itself is a violation of international law. The Iranians could not just sit silent and not respond. So the Israelis invited them to respond. But the response, despite the fact, as you said, there were 300 rockets, was we never seen something like this, including rockets that flew over the Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem, which is like by itself, it's interesting. But the fact that they give them enough warning, they talk to all the neighbors in the countries in the neighborhood, they talk to the Americans, they knew that they were coming. And some of this, the drones, it took 9 hours to arrive. So it was a message from the Iranians to say to the Israelis, we can hit you, but they knew exactly that they don't want to cause any damage. No civilian casualties, no serious damage, just a show of force to say, stay away. You know, we can fight if we want to, but we don't want escalation and a bigger war.
We're going to take a quick break, and we will resume our discussion when we come back.
ArabNews.com, bringing you breaking news from across the Middle East and the latest on Arabs in America. Get inside the latest headlines with expert analysis and insights at ArabNews.com. Join over 5 million Facebook fans and over 10 million monthly readers. ArabNews.com, news that matters to you. Light for Relief and Development has now been rated as one of the best charities for humanitarian aid. Life's humanitarian projects span the globe, and Life is celebrating its 30th anniversary of providing essential life-saving aid to people and communities in 36 countries, regardless of race, color, religion, or cultural background. Where there is life, there is hope. And when disaster occurs here or around the world, including being one of the first responders to the Turkey-Syria earthquake crisis, Life for Relief and Development rushes in to provide food, medical aid, and shelter to those in need. We are looking to help the earthquake victims, and we take 0% overhead on emergency donations. So please help improve these efforts. Learn more about our involvement to help the helpless and bring hope where it's needed most. And make your tax-deductible donation to Life for Relief and Development now at lifeusa.org or call 248-424-7493. That's 248-424-7493.
Hey, Michigan drivers. Are you sending or answering group chats behind the wheel? Checking emails at the light? Calling family or friends on the commute? Michigan's hands-free law makes it illegal to manually use electronic devices while behind the wheel of a vehicle. Breaking the law could mean fines or even community service. Go hands-free. Just drive. It's the law. Learn more at michigan.gov/distracteddriving. A message from the Michigan Office of Highway Safety Planning.
I am Atif Abdeljawad. Join me the first Friday of each month at 8 a.m. Eastern Time. I will be discussing some of the most important issues and events in the Middle East live on America's Voice of the Arabs. WNZK 690 AM and WDMV 700 AM.
Welcome back to Radio Baladi. We are discussing the tensions in Gaza, the tensions on U.S. college campuses. Belinda, Nadia just explained that neither Iran nor Israel really want to get involved in direct war.
Not Israel, the United States and Iran.
Israel and Iran, yes. Did I get it right?
The United States and Iran don't want a bigger war.
Oh, okay.
The Netanyahu government wants to be engaged.
Okay, so now Israel responded by launching an attack near Isfahan in April, but Iran never took a counteraction. Was that a way to avoid escalation, or there may be other reasons?
I do believe that Iran does not want an escalation, and I think when it launched all the drones and missiles, it watched carefully the response from the U.S. aircraft carriers, Jordan, the Gulf. They know where all the anti-ballistic material is, and they didn't send their best stuff. They just sent old drones and things. I think it was a very calculated move just to show force and just see what the world did. And one other thing, all this timing is so suspicious to me. Israel launches this attack on a consulate. It knows there's going to be a response. And of course there is. And by April 21st, the House, and then right after the Senate, and then Biden approves all of this money for Israel because poor Israel is under attack by Iran. And I think it was calculated to rush the aid through because people were talking about it and saying, do we want to send all this aid to Ukraine and Israel? It rushed, it made our Congress send the aid. It worked. Israel, that's all that really Israel was caring about during this attack, and protecting Netanyahu and keeping him out of jail.
Bradley, explain to us what you mean by the end of Israel, the title of your new book.
Well, it has a dual meaning. It revolves around Netanyahu's effect on Israel, and this profound effect. He's been in office for almost, in and out, for almost 30 years now. And what he did was to put an end to a particular vision of Israel that was set out in the Declaration of Independence, which had to do with a modern liberal country aiming for an eventual democratic state of some form of equality. He basically put an end to that legislatively and otherwise, and also through this nation state law, which basically said that Israel was going to be a Jewish state no matter what, and not necessarily democratic, and through a coalition which included the most extreme, truly scum of the earth politicians he could collect for his particular coalition. But there's another meaning to the title, which is the question of what is the end of Israel, in the sense of what is Israel trying to do as a country? What's the purpose of Israel? Originally, that goal was to be a refuge for Jews endangered abroad. That's no longer true. And what we do have now as an end to Israel, as an endpoint, as a strategy, as a goal, is a country which is trying to fulfill various messianic prophecies as interpreted by radical right rabbis in taking over as much of the Holy Land as possible. And what you see in the case of Gaza is you have these same extremists in the government calling for a policy which would include occupying and actually settling parts or all of the Gaza Strip. Whether that will happen, I think that the pressure of the Biden administration will be exactly in the opposite direction. And it's absolutely possible that the government is so extreme that in some reaction to this, what we see now is the reappearance of what we thought was absolutely dead, which was the possibility of a two-state solution, which would include a Palestinian state alongside of Israel.
We'll discuss the idea of the two-state solution later on in this program, but Nadia, what's the reaction of your audience, viewers in the Arab world to the student protests in the U.S.?
They have been welcoming, actually, especially from Gaza to this protest. There is kids in Gaza that have seen on the social media carrying banners saying, thank you, Colombia, thank you, UCLA, thank you, Yale, thank you, all the universities. They feel that at least there is somebody who sympathizes with them on a humanitarian level, on a human level. They believe that maybe this is will help at least to change something in terms of policies. And they see the contradictory picture of a president of the United States, Joe Biden, who declares on every opportunity that he's the strongest supporter of the state of Israel, he's a Zionist, and he funneled all this money to Israel. And just to pick up what Brenda just said, actually, before the attack, the Iranian attack, Israeli attack, and the counter-Iranian attack, let's remember what happened in that period, which feels like years ago, it's only like a month ago. Netanyahu and his government, extremist government, as Bradley just mentioned, whether it's Ben Gafir or Smotrich, they were isolated. The president of the United States would, in the last two calls, almost hang up on Netanyahu. Chuck Schumer, the head of the Senate, who is very pro-Israel, Jewish himself, he actually called for Netanyahu to be ousted, and he called for a new leadership. And suddenly, what happened is, with this attack, everybody started coming back to change the equation, and now we have support for Israel, passing the $26 billion. And now Netanyahu, as we speak now, is waiting an invitation from the House and the Senate to speak. I mean, before he was like literally completely by himself, isolated. Nobody wanted to speak with him. And now he was persona non grata. And now he is welcomed in a capital like Washington. So, you know, when people see the hypocrisy of many politicians, they really welcome the students because they believe the students are fighting on the principle of equality and justice. They believe that the Israeli-Palestinian question is very a fair cause that needs support. And many of my friends will ask, like, why the students are so passionate about the Palestinian issue and not about Ukraine or about Syria, where what's his name, Bashar al-Assad, has killed 500,000 people. And I say to them, because the Palestinian cause goes back to 75 years and justice was never delivered. So this is a cause and the word that was missing from the whole debate, if you listen in the last 6 months, is the word occupation. Nobody mentioned the word occupation. Nobody said that Israel is an occupying country of the West Bank and Gaza and East Jerusalem. And therefore, the students and everybody else who nuance in the Middle East understand it. And just last point, which I'll make to Brenda's reference, which is Rashid Khalidi's book, which I reread again, actually, 100 Years War on the Palestinians. If you read it again, Jawad, you will see that chunks of it, you can take it out and apply it now. It's exactly what happened. But the enemy at the time was the PLO. It wasn't Hamas. And the Israelis used exactly the same tactics, whether it is the pretext, the way they carried on and killed almost, I think, 17,000 civilians in Lebanon during the invasion of 1982. So it's history repeats itself. And the students maybe gets it, but others don't for political reasons.
Nadia, you said there is an idea of inviting Mr. Netanyahu to speak before the U.S. Congress. If that happens, do you expect the crowds to move from campuses to around Capitol Hill?
I mean, there is protest everywhere. Before the students' movement and the protests that we have seen on campus, I covered the White House and the State Department. I traveled with the President and the Secretary of State. I've seen protests outside Blinken House. I've seen protests interrupting the President's speech everywhere he goes. So there is another movement, other people who are protesting against that. For sure, it's going to be a protest. Whether they're the students or not, I'm not so sure. Because don't forget, it's going to be end of the semester soon. Most of the students will go back home. And that's the hope, that this movement will die out, or at least it will fizzle out by the time that they will have summer graduation. Not for everybody, because many students were suspended, as you know, and obviously they're going to pay a price for that. But I think the protest will be there, for sure. But Netanyahu is welcome now, because after the attacks and counterattacks between Israel and Iran, things has changed. So it's a different picture than it was, you know, a month ago.
We'll take another short break.
Get ready for an amazing experience at Ishtar Restaurant on 15 Mile Road in Sterling Heights. Enjoy excellent hospitality from owners Ali Abagdadi and Fatty Bonham, serving the best in Mediterranean food. Try Chef Ali Abagdadi's famous shawarma, the best Iraqi grills and food, and the best Arabic and international dishes. Dine in our authentic atmosphere or take out. Call 586-698-2585 or check us out on Facebook. Ishtar Restaurant practices all CDC guidelines and is open every day 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Have an amazing experience today at Ishtar Restaurant, 3625 15 Mile Road, Sterling Heights.
Hey, Michigan drivers, are you sending or answering group chats behind the wheel? Checking emails at the light? Calling family or friends on the commute? Michigan's hands-free law makes it illegal to manually use electronic devices while behind the wheel of a vehicle. Breaking the law could mean fines or even community service. Go hands-free. Just drive. It's the law. Learn more at michigan.gov/distracted-driving. A message from the Michigan Office of Highway Safety Planning.
Ziad Brand. Quality products from our family to yours. Ziad Brothers Importing offers the finest quality products, including brands like Sultan, Kraft, Nestle, Hook, Rico Picon, Donna, and many more. Ask your retailer to carry these fine products because you deserve the very best. For more information, visit our website at www.ziad.com. That's www.ziad.com. Ziad, quality products from our family to yours.
I am Atif Abdeljawad. Join me the first Friday of each month at 8 a.m. Eastern Time. I will be discussing some of the most important issues and events in the Middle East live on America's Voice of the Arabs. WNZK 690 AM and WDMV 700 AM.
Welcome back to Radio Baladi. We are discussing tensions in the Middle East and tensions on U.S. college campuses. Belinda, American society and leaders have traditionally been pro-Israeli. So what's happening now?
Well, I think they're still, the older folks are still pretty pro-Israeli. But it is changing. I got a text from a friend I've known for years saying, what's going on in campuses and how come there's so much violence? And I said, oh, I think the campuses are doing great and stuff. She is getting her information from the mainstream press, which is claiming those college campus protests are anti-Semitic, that Jewish kids feel in danger. It's violent on the campuses. Our media, it's doing what it always does and turning to violence instead of the issues. Why are the students protesting? What is happening in Gaza? I think the media has to change. And luckily, the students aren't watching this stuff on. And actually, I'm not watching mainstream press either. They just are in a different league. We are all getting information from online sources and in our magazine. And one more thing, we have a bookstore in downtown DC in Adams Morgan. We are selling so many books to young people and keffiyehs and signs and stickers, pins, lapel pins. kids are getting the information. They are reading, unlike their parents, probably. I really have confidence that things are going to change.
But Belinda, you are right, because the media is focused on what happened to Israelis on October 7th. They never talked about the Haganah, what Ben-Gurion and his militias did to the Palestinians prior to 1948. So media people in the U.S. need to take history lessons.
Yeah. Agreed.
Bradley, explain to us why the current Israeli government rejects the two-state solution. Isn't it better a better idea for Israel itself?
Yeah, it's a question which is one of these questions you could either answer in 30,000 words or in one sentence. And but the one sentence is that there is a very strong, I would say, revolutionary movement within Israel, which sees as Israel's mission to defeat the two-state solution and to really take over the Holy Land as much as possible. They see it as a religious imperative. I mean, oddly enough, their ideology aligns in a very peculiar way, in a mirror image, with Hamas. One of the extreme members of the government, he's now the finance minister, Smotrich, said a few years ago that Hamas is an asset as opposed to the Palestinian Authority, which is a threat, because the Palestinian Authority, at least in theory, is the route toward a, or was anyway, the route toward a two-state solution. And as you listen to Netanyahu's government, especially the extremists there, and in fact, if you listen to, and if you look at Hamas as a ideological force, what you see is that the real enemy of Israel is not Hamas, but a two-state solution. That's the enemy. And from Hamas, it's the same. Hamas is tremendously threatened by the possibility that there might be an alliance which includes a vision toward a two-state solution, an alliance with Israel and Saudi Arabia, the Emirates, Bahrain, Jordan, Morocco, a grand coalition. This is what should have happened after October 7th. If Netanyahu was the Churchillian statesman that he pretends to, or he believes that he is, and in fact he's not, he could have, with Biden and the EU, and in fact the UN, come up with a coalition which would have unseated Hamas, especially the military wing, which would have replaced it with another form of the Palestinian Authority, with the Palestine Liberation Organization's blessing to some degree. And this entire bloodbath could have been entirely avoided. And history has shown that a right-wing leader can be persuasive in fighting off the lobbying of the settlers. Begin did it to make peace with Egypt over the opposition of the settlers. Sharon did it by leaving Gaza over the very, very strong opposition of the settlers. And in fact, he removed 6,000 or 8,000 settlers who were living in Gaza in order to do it. But Netanyahu doesn't have it in him. He doesn't have the courage. He doesn't have the vision. And at this point, he knows that no one in Israel believes in what he says. The latest poll showed 85% of Israelis don't believe him when he talks. And so he has to stay in an office in a sense because he's unelectable. And it's a crazy irony, but that unfortunately is the answer. I know I went over my one sentence limit, but that's the answer.
Nadia, I have a tough question for you. By hitting Israel, even though there isn't much damage, is Iran winning the hearts and minds of people in the Middle East?
Not really, and it depends on who you're talking to. The pro-Iran camp, they will applaud that. The anti-Iran camp, they think it's the most useless thing that they have done. Because, as I said, Netanyahu was isolated. What they did, whether they intended it or not, is basically re-instigate Netanyahu as a figure that the West can talk to. You can see whether it's Cameron, the foreign minister of Britain, who rushed to Tel Aviv to meet with Netanyahu, whether it's the prime minister, Rishi Sunak, who called him, whether the president of the United States, whether the president of France, whether it's Germany, the whole international community rushed to defend Israel because it was under attack by the Iranian. There was many jokes and cartoons in the Arab press to show these rockets as, you know, they say it's a bun. They're playing on the Arabic word that it is a choice, but it's also, it means cucumber in Arabic. And they show the records, the rockets that have been fired as cucumbers, meaning that they're very ineffective and they're not going anywhere. So it wasn't really, it didn't win hearts and minds. As I said, only the people who believe that Iran has purpose to help the Palestinians, but many people believe that Iran has its own agenda, and Iran is never really intended to help the Palestinians at all. And don't forget, the PLO and the Palestinian project, it's never been a religious one. It's never been an Islamist one. It is actually, if you can go back to when Khomeini met with Arafat, and Arafat told him, we are a nation of Muslims and Christians, and we have Jews too, who are in historical Palestine. So the project for the Palestinians, and I speak personally on this issue as a Palestinian, is a national aim to bring a two-state solution where everybody lives equally together. So the Iranian project is really an Islamist one to extradite the Iranian revolution. And they have different, and as you know, historically, the Iranians and the Arabs would never been friends, whether the Persians or the Arabs, etc. So I will say it's a nuanced answer, but I don't agree that personally that has helped the Palestinian issues at all. And we talked for 2 weeks. We didn't talk about Gaza. We talked about Iran. The media completely rushed to talk about Israel. CNN and all the other Fox and all the other networks sent reporters again, just like after October 7th, to Israel to show how Israelis are scared from the rockets, although, as you said, they didn't do hardly any damage.
Brenda, what do you think of the way President Joe Biden is handling the Gaza war?
So I think he could lose the election because of the way he is handling the Gaza war. He has still been very, very pro-Israel, no matter what. He's saying, you get our money, you get our weapons, no matter what, but please be kind. Let the Palestinian women and children be okay in Rafah. Don't attack Rafah. But he's not putting any will in his words. He's not putting action into words. He really could lose this election. And then we have Trump, and then, but we'll, this country will deserve whatever it gets.
We're going to take another one last and final commercial break.
At Top Rehab Physical Therapy Clinic in Dearborn, we provide effective physical therapy sessions in order to limit pain and discomfort. Top Rehab provides physical therapy care for any diagnosis prescribed by a physician, and we regularly see and treat conditions such as stroke, TMJ, fibromyalgia, sciatica, joint pain, and more. We use a variety of pain management methods, including modalities, soft tissue mobilization, and therapeutic exercise. If you're in need of physical rehabilitation or physical therapy, get the highest quality health care at Top Rehab. Most insurance is accepted, and we're open Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 8 to 6, Tuesday and Thursday, 8 to 5, and Saturday, 10 till 2. Call for an appointment today at 313-846-0555. That's 313-846-0555. Choose Top Rehab Physical Therapy Clinic on Michigan Avenue in Dearborn. Life's too short to be in pain.
Hey, Michigan drivers. Are you sending or answering group chats behind the wheel? Checking emails at the light? Calling family or friends on the commute? Michigan's hands-free law makes it illegal to manually use electronic devices while behind the wheel of a vehicle. Breaking the law could mean fines or even community service. Go hands-free. Just drive. It's the law. Learn more at michigan.gov/distracteddriving. A message from the Michigan Office of Highway Safety Planning.
With more than 30,000 successful in vitro fertilizations, IVF Michigan is now ranked as one of America's best fertility clinics, according to Newsweek magazine. IVF Michigan fertility centers are the recognized leaders in high-quality fertility care. With locations in Bloomfield Hills and 9 other cities in Michigan and Ohio, IVF has experts in all aspects of the field. A founding member, American Board Certified Dr. Nicholas Shama, is one of the leading reproductive endocrinologists in Michigan and Ohio. He has performed over 20,000 successful IVF cases, and it's helped thousands of couples fulfill their dreams of parenthood. When it's time to get personalized care from Dr. Nicholas Shama at one of America's best fertility clinics, call IVF Michigan Fertility Centers in Michigan and Ohio toll-free at 855-952-9600. 855-952-9600.
I am Atif Abdeljawad. Join me the first Friday of each month at 8 a.m. Eastern Time. I will be discussing some of the most important issues and events in the Middle East live on America's Voice of the Arabs. WNZK 690 AM and WDMV 700 AM.
Welcome back to Radio Baladi. We are discussing tensions in the Middle East and tensions on Colombia and elsewhere in the U.S. Bradley, will the current Israeli government survive the Gaza war?
I think it's conceivable that the government could survive it. I think that Netanyahu will have to use every devious method he could possibly come up with to drive a wedge through the heart of Israeli society. He thinks that if he can manage to keep the government going until its term limit, which is the end of this term is October 27th, 2026. And I think what he thinks is that if you keep the government going long enough, he can come up with an alternative coalition which would keep him in power. He might be able to expel some of the more extreme elements and therefore kind of mollify the anger within Israeli society. But it's very important to point out that he has very little support. Most people believe that he has mismanaged the war. The war should never have happened if he had been tending to what to his job instead of dealing with trials and also trying to take apart the judicial system, then the war would never have happened because the society and the army would have been prepared for something like this and would have deterred something like this October 7th attack. But I believe that he thinks that just as in the past, he seemed to have no chance, no route to gaining the premiership. This was true in 1996. It was also true in 2015. He was way behind in the polls, but he figured out something, some magic bullet. In 2015, it was racism. In 1996, it was in fact Hamas who put him in power through suicide bombings in Israeli cities, in the hearts of Israeli cities. He seemed to have no chance. He seems to have no chance now. I think what may happen, oddly enough, is that his health has begun to fail. He's trying to keep it quiet. I'm not going to say, I'm not going to say what I think in terms of what should happen, but I think his health may decide whether this government stands or falls.
Nadia, what comes to your mind when you hear some people say the protests are fed by external elements like anarchy groups?
I mean, it is extremely unfair to say that because, as I said, I went myself on the ground and I talked to students, at least one university, maybe two. That's not true at all. As I said, they're trying to delegitimize a movement that is critical of what Israel is doing in Gaza. And what Israel is doing is a clear violation of international law, of the Geneva Convention, of international humanitarian law, despite the fact that this administration defends them day in and day out. And until now, they said they have found no evidence of that. So to say that they're agitators, they're outsiders, you heard this many times before. When you have, whether it is an opposition or a legitimate movement or a student protest, always you're trying to say that they're not real. They are instigators. There's people from outside. I'm not saying that might be some element who are actually not students, but you cannot paint them with a broad brush to say that these students, or 90% or maybe 95% or maybe more, are peaceful protesters. And by the way, the violence on the campus only happened when the administration of the university, like in Columbia and UCLA, has called, or in Austin as well in Texas, has called the police to interfere. And the police brutally put down and arrested many of the students and faculty members as well. We have seen that professor of philosophy in Texas and elsewhere. So the violence was never part of this movement. And again, there might be also some elements who are really anti-Semitic, but they are tiny, tiny little elements and few fringes. But the majority of these people really sympathetic with what's happening in Palestine. They want to end the occupation. They truly believe that Israel can only survive if it has the only security for Israel is the establishment of a Palestinian state, because no justice, no peace is a real slogan. It's not just something you carry in demonstrations.
Brenda, should the students be pardoned and allowed to continue their education? I mean, those suspended or expelled?
Absolutely. They're speaking out, they're using their First Amendment rights to speak out. That's what we train students to do in our universities, to express themselves, to learn, to do exactly what they're doing. And wars stop because students speak out and oppose wars. They are on the right side of history. We need to listen to them. And President Biden needs to listen to them instead of saying, oh, stop the violence. And today's Washington Post, he says, we've seen the images. Violent protest is not protected. Peaceful protest is. Well, it is peaceful until the pro-Israel protesters come and attack students or police. And in D.C., we're used to peaceful protests, and the police will not come in and attack students at Columbia. I mean, at here.
GW.
Yeah, GW. Thank you.
Bradley, what is the ultimate solution for the Palestinian-Israeli conflict?
What is? I'm sorry. Can you ask the question again?
what is the ultimate solution?
Well, I believe that eventually, when one or two generations pass and the blood feud begins to subside, I think that there will be a confederation between an Israeli nation and a Palestinian nation. I think it's going to be a very peculiar arrangement, but there are already many Israelis and Palestinians who are having discussions about the possibility of a future confederation, which would make it possible for there to be a Palestinian state living alongside an Israeli state in peace and security. I think it's fair to say that any one state solution that doesn't take into account the fact that Israelis and Palestinians want their own independent state will fail. The idea of a democratic secular state has very little support here. The idea of a all Palestinian or an all Israeli state, I think, has no future, in the sense that it will be a civil war that's unending. And the confederation idea, which is difficult to understand and is only now starting to come into focus, will eventually be the answer to having an independent Palestine alongside an independent Israel.
Nadia, what is the question that I have failed in asking you that you would like to address in a few seconds?
Oh my God. I don't think I can process that quickly. I really, I mean, I think we covered most of the issues, and I just agree very quickly that the only way we can go forward to end the bloodshed is to start on day one of how we can establish the blueprint for a Palestinian state and end this violence once for all, once and for all. And I believe that this is the most just cause that galvanized the whole world. You know, you see demonstrations not just in the U.S., by the way, they are in Europe as well. They are in Australia. There is everywhere. So, and we need to have an accountable system in the U.S. I'm so disappointed by everything. The media, the politician, the principles that are held so dearly about the First Amendment right and all these things, I see the politician trampling upon it. So I hope that one day we change the society peacefully through the voting system, through legislation, and we will have a better America, because we're still evolving towards a better democracy and a better state in the future.
Nadia Belbati, thank you very much. My thanks also go to Blenda Curtis-Hanley and Bradley Burston, and I will see you again the first Friday next month. Have a good weekend.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you so much.
It's to you too.